evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you once again for joining us here at Connecting the Dots. Always a pleasure and always an honor to have your ears, your hearts, your minds, and your thoughts and your creative process. Your host, Frosty Wooldridge, at Connecting the Dots here at Republic Broadcasting. And as you know, and as you have seen on the radio tonight and the TV, you're seeing all the kinds of things that are going on in this country right now with the crises of gasoline. And I think one of the interviews out there was with some big expert. I think it was Richard Ingalls tonight, and he said on Brian Williams, NBC, that oil could go up to an extraordinary $400 a barrel. Boy, if that doesn't have us all over a barrel, I don't know what does, because it's almost like stunning how fast we as a nation and we as a civilization are being hit, and how we're really being really just almost single-handedly taken down to a whole new notch, another kind of arena of financial distress. I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen, but I know I'm reducing myself to a bicycle riding everywhere, and that $4 and $5 and $6 a gallon is taking people out of their retirement. It's taking everybody out of everything, and then you start looking at the salmonella is 869 cases now across the nation, and all those kinds of consequences. I tell you what, we got ourselves in a pickle, and I'm not sure this pickle barrel is going to go away anytime soon. And one of the things that I've said in one of my columns, and I just talked about the fact that yesterday I wrote a piece on the congressman from Utah who just got booted out, and that's that Chris Cannon guy. He got beat out by a guy named Jason Chavez. And hopefully more and more congressmen that are really supporting illegal immigration are going to get booted out on their little patooties here as fast as possible, because the damage being done by all these congressmen right now that have been doing nothing in favor of America and doing everything in favor of foreign countries and illegal alien invaders is really quite distressing. So hopefully we have a chance, we have an ability, at least for a while longer, that we're still in the majority. That's American citizens versus illegal alien migrants in our country, now somewhere between 20 and 38 million, no small number. And I talked to the liaison officer for Tom Tancredo today, and I was in Senator Allard's office here in Denver, and we have almost an unsurmountable situation. If Obama gets elected, he's going to push the amnesty and complete legalization of all the illegals, and then he'll be fought by the Republicans. But if John McCain gets in, then he's going to push amnesty, and the Democrats are going to vote for that, and so will the Republicans, and we're going to get the crisis of adding, again, these 20 to 38 million illegals, and they'll all become voters and all become legal and be able to come tapping into our situation. So it's our Social Security and you name it. So it's not going to be fun for any of us. And so these are interesting times, along with the fact that Israel is entertaining the possibility of bombing Iran's programs on nuclear bombs. So this country, this world, the planet itself, is finding itself in some really, how should I say it, really more than interesting times we live in, ladies and gentlemen. As you can tell, I'm a little contemplative tonight, but we're going to have a guest on, and we're going to talk about what we're doing and what's coming on. You're listening to Connecting the Dots with Frosty Wooldridge, Denver, Colorado. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back on the other side of these commercial comments. Good, the bad, and the ugly. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. And boy, there's some good, and there's some bad, and there's some ugly. And I'm My guest tonight is a Minuteman, and one that has been really involved in the crisis we face here in this country. But I also want to bring to your attention, and I'm going to do a review on this book. Before we get to Jim Haas, I want to just get this to your information and also recommend this highly. I know Mark Krikorian of the Center for Immigration Studies. That's www.cis.org. He's written a new book, and I'm looking at it right here. It's got a picture of Lady Liberty, and she's got her big hand up saying stop. And the title of it is The New Case Against Immigration, Both Legal and Illegal. And Michelle Malkin writes about it. When it comes to our immigration mess, no one has a deeper understanding of the facts than Mark Krikorian. Pay attention. America's future is at stake. And, gosh, he's got a lot of endorsements here, and I totally agree because I'm going to write an endorsement myself. But William Bennett wrote, Mark Krikorian steps back from today's debates and examines the big picture, questioning the place of immigration in modern society. Agree or disagree with his proposal, this is an important book, not for conservatives only, but for all Americans. Superbly researched and brilliantly argued, the new case against immigration should settle the debate once and for all. Civilized, compassionate, and wise, this book may yet save this great nation. And that was David Frum. And Heather McDonald, a tremendous author, this is a radical book, clearly and forcefully written, with the potential to change the immigration debate forevermore. No matter where you stand on immigration policy, you better be ready to confront the new case against immigration. And he talks about this thing, and I've heard him speak in Washington, D.C., that we are a nation that is mature. We no longer can continue to take on immigrants from around the third world because they don't have the skills, they don't have the ability. And he talks about transnationalism. And transnationalism means that these people can come into this country, partake in this country, but then they never become part of this country. They have no identity with this country. And you're seeing it happen with the Muslims up there in Detroit and certainly in Chicago and certainly in L.A. You're seeing it in Fremont, California. They're creating a little Baghdad of their own. You're also seeing it in, Atlanta. You even see it here in Colorado where we have to make laws against them because they want to commit female genital mutilation in our own state of Colorado, and we had to stop that. And the real crisis is because phone calls continue to be 20 cents for 10 minutes or whatever they are. These people that immigrate here never fully integrate into our country. They're called transnationals, and that means that they simply are dual citizenship people with no foot in, no foot out, no loyalty of, and no sense of investment in. And if you look at what happened to the Roman Empire, if you look at current-day Paris, France, and much of France, or you look at London, England, or Holland, Amsterdam, Holland, you're seeing the separation of those countries against themselves. And I want to, because my guest tonight is very intimate about these and understands these things, I want to just talk about job site racism. And Jim Haas says this, and he is the author of this new book coming out. We're going to talk about that. No one, he said, and I mean no one, is more racist than Mexicans. They are also very clannish. They often get jobs for people from their own towns and villages only. They only hire other Mexicans. The reason that very few blacks or whites are seen on construction jobs is simply because Mexicans are extremely racist, and the Mexican way of doing business requires the payment of a mordida. In Spanish, that's bite, or the bribe, if you will. And a black man or a white man or an Asian will not pay a mordida to the job foreman to keep his job, but a Mexican will. It's a part of their culture. After all, that's how they do it in Mexico. So the next time a Mexican calls you a racist, remember that he really thinks that you are because he is a racist himself and cannot comprehend that you are not just like him, unquote. Welcome to the show, Jim, and you are living in Grand Junction, Colorado, and you have seen and you are watching some things change over there, but kind of give us an idea of what Colorado and America faces if we continue on this particular path.
Well, it's total destruction, I guess you might say, Frosty, if we continue on the course we're on right now, like the present leadership has us. I don't really have much confidence in a change of leadership the way things are set up right now. I don't think Obama or McCain, either one, is going to change anything. If anything, they may make it worse. They're both almost guaranteeing amnesty to the illegals right now. They're talking out of both sides of their mouth. They're making promises they can't possibly keep. Everyone is literally hispandering, is the word is being in common use right now around the country.
Right. Well, there's no question they are hispandering, and you've seen the entire immigration issue pushed off the front burner. How much longer can that go on?
I don't know, because this guy, Chris Cannon, that just got voted out in Utah, he thought he'd get away with riding roughshod over his constituents, and they told him, no, immigration's very important to us. We're the ones that are suffering under it. You guys are up in your ivory palaces in the legislature, and you don't have to deal with these people on a day-to-day basis and a job-to-job basis, but we do. And it's our taxes that are going for these emergency room free care for the illegals and all of the social services and things that are having to be paid for by the taxpayers. It's getting to be a real burden on them, especially now that the economy has slowed down and a lot of them are losing their jobs. Immigration is one of the top three subjects, I would think, and I just cannot imagine why these two parties are not barely mentioning it as far as the American taxpayer is concerned.
I'm almost exasperated beyond belief and astounded myself. And although I do see a glimmer of hope, and that is that the people of Utah said, no way, Jose. And Jose, of course, is Chris Cannon, the 12-year and forever incumbent who has pushed for La Raza, who has spoken and been celebrated by La Raza, and who has been funded by all sorts of organizations that are really here to break up America and push the Mexican initiative into this country, the Reconquista de Azatlan. And finally, after 12 years, I think he's been in for 12 or 14 years now, he finally got dumped. And he got dumped in a big way, 60-40, which is a landslide against him, even though he outspent Jason Chavez 7-1.
Yeah, 7-1 is what I heard.
Yeah, that's big money, you know, and it just goes to show you that we have the choice here in this republic still. Now, many of us may be dumber than a box of rocks to continue voting and simply support something like John McCain right up into the presidency when this guy has proven he has not been standing up for America, certainly not the rule of law. He was the one man with Kennedy back there in 86, who gave an amnesty to 4.3 million illegals, instant citizenship. He then helped them flood themselves into this country with more, now well over 20 to 38 million. And now he wants to be president of the United States so he can do more of the same. And then you've got the same thing with Obama, who has not done anything as a senator to stand up against illegal aliens in this country, and yet he wants to bring the amnesty. He voted for it along with McCain in June of last year. I tell you what, we've really put ourselves as the American citizenry behind the eight ball.
That's a fact, Frosty, and I think Obama voted against English as the official language, and I think he voted for giving our Social Security to the illegal aliens, making them eligible to go on to Social Security rolls, which were already underfunded, and the funds have been stolen by the government to fund other programs and things over the years. Starting back with, I believe, with Reagan as the first one that raided the funds. It's just ridiculous, you know, what's going on in this country. And it seems like the people are just sound asleep, at least some of them are. And you don't hear very much noise being made. The mainstream media is in bed with the politicians and the government. You never hear any of these stories unless you get on the net. Thank God we've still got the net, more or less uncensored, that can get the truth out there to people and let everybody know what everybody else is doing. But this country, if the voters don't wake up this fall and straighten things out on their local and state levels, there's not much hope at the federal level.
I agree. There's not much hope at all. Now, I want to kind of go over some history with you. You were a licensed California general building contractor right back in the 1960s and 70s and even into the 80s when you had to leave California because it was simply being taken over by illegal aliens. You were one of the original Minutemen down there April 1st of 2005. I know we crossed paths. We had to because we were in the same buildings at the same time. But you're writing a definitive book on the Minuteman movement. Could you kind of give us an appreciation for this book that you're writing, what it's going to do and how it's doing it and where it's taking you?
Sure. It's going to basically let the reader go on a journey to the border. He's going to go down and see the border in April of 2005, and then he's going to literally see the shape of the non-existent fence. He's going to encounter the danger in the Huachuca Mountains where the hard drugs are coming in and where immigrant smuggling is happening 7 miles inside the United States. And he's going to go over to Campo, which is an area in California about 60 miles inland from San Diego. He's going to do duty on the Campo line there, is what has become known among the Minutemen. He's going to take up a post that's 1 mile from the Felix, the Arellano Felix drug cartel's distribution center. He's going to do duty there. He's going to basically be involved in shutting down a major drug smuggling canyon that starts right up to Arellano Felix drug cartel's house and goes right on down into the valley where it makes connections with Highway 94 there. That was the principal drug smuggling corridor in California at the time that the Minutemen took up operations there in July of 2005. And it'll go a little bit into the political end of the Minutemen, how they were formed, who the three co-founders were, how they've split up and gone their separate ways, how they stimulated the formation of hundreds of smaller Minutemen groups across the nation and other patriotic anti-open borders activists. And it'll just cover a broad spectrum, but it'll let you know what it's like to be a Minuteman on the line.
Sounds great. We're going to be right back with Jim Haas, author of this next book on the Minutemen. We'll be right back after these commercial comments. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you once again for joining us here at Connecting the Dots, your host, Frosty Wooldridge, and I'm talking with Jim Haas, an original Minuteman who has created what I consider a very important book, because what it does is it shows you that every American not only has the responsibility, and they also have the opportunity to serve their country in a civilian, really a civilian role. And James, or I think it was not James, it was John F. Kennedy, said that we need to have a militia to stand up for America and really stand up for Americans' way of life and all of those things, because as we all know, George Bush and the federal government simply will not stand up for our borders, will not stand up for the rule of law, will not stand up for Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution, and that's why the three individuals that are really the proactive force here, Jim Gilchrist and Chris Simcox, and I think the other third fellow, but I don't, his name escapes me.
Jim Chase.
Yeah, Jim Chase. These men stood up, and now you have individuals in across the nation with chapters of the Minutemen. And I'm a Minuteman up here in Denver, Colorado, and making a difference inside the country and outside the country at job sites and so forth. One of the other things, what are some of the things you hope to accomplish as you get this book out to the public?
Well, I want to make everybody aware that in the first place we don't have a border per se, except for maybe 13 miles at San Diego. Mm-hmm. Of the double fence that we were promised and that was actually signed into law and then has never been built. We've been getting the runaround and the tap-toe shoe dance from Chertoff for the last couple of years on it. He's been doing everything. He's been building a little bit of a border barricade for cars that the Mexicans have ramps. They just drop on them and jump a car right over or a truck right over the barricades. This is in numerous places. There's actual places where there's absolutely no sign of a fence or a barricade or anything whatsoever. When the Corps of Engineers comes along building a new road and putting up some new fence, they put in great big culverts that are big enough where a Mexican can come in almost standing up and only has to crouch a little bit to walk into the United States. And people are always shown these semi-nice fences right in the border towns. And even there, very easy to climb. But we basically need a fence like at San Diego, at San Ysidro, a double fence with a nice Border Patrol road in between and enough Border Patrol to catch them as they go between the two fences. That system works. And it's really reduced crime in San Diego since it's been instituted here, I think, 8 or 10 years ago. and they improve it all the time, but that's what we need. We need a real fence. Then you can have some deportations take place through attrition, through enforcing laws against the employers and using this E-Verify system to detect and get rid of the illegals here. Then when you deport them, they'll stay deported. Right now, it's just an open border. You can deport them, but they bounce back the next day. Some guys have been deported as many as 15 or 20 times and keep coming back. And the first entry illegally into the United States is a misdemeanor. The second time is supposed to be a felony. Every one of these that enter on the second time can be charged and prosecuted for a felony. Why aren't they? If you enforced it on them, the word would get out, and very few would be willing to risk spending 5 or 10 years in jail for illegal entry. But when you don't enforce it, they get bolder and bolder, and they have little or no respect for our immigration laws right now at all.
Well, we know that for a fact, because 20-plus, up to 30-plus, and even 38 million is a high estimate. So anywhere between 20 and 30 million individuals have come here illegally. That includes 2 million Chinese who are in this country illegally. For most people who don't know this, I'll give you some really startling figures. Forbes magazine came out 3 years ago showing that the Asia, which is packed in with people, there's no such thing as any kind of a possibility for a reasonable life over there. You're just packed in like sardines. They pay $35,000 to $50,000 to get over to America, and it's a $7 billion a year people smuggling venture. And it's Forbes reported on that in 2005, and that nothing's changed. This country, this president, this Congress simply refuse, and I mean refuse, to abide by their oaths of office. That's 100 senators. You'd never hear of any of them speaking up, although at least 53 of them, I believe, voted against the amnesty last June. But you never see these guys standing up and speaking out. In fact, our own Senator Allard, I mean, he's the quietest guy. He was voted one of the five worst senators in the U.S. Senate last year by one big magazine. I forget what magazine that was. And then you also have Salazar, who's, you can imagine, Salazar, he is totally in favor of giving amnesty to illegal aliens and doing nothing to enforce our laws. And in fact, he should be celebrated by La Raza because he's so pro-illegal. It's really frustrating, and this goes on for all of the senators across America that have not done their jobs. And of course, the House of Representatives, much the same, and that's why we're sticking in the side of this mess right now. What do you think, Jim, is going to take for these public servants to finally do their job? Do we all have to start getting killed? Do we all have to be out of a job? Do they have to have race riots? Do we have to have...
Well, what I've always said all along to everybody is I think it's going to take a million rifleman march on Washington to straighten it out. You're going to have to do something almost that drastic to wake these Congress critters up. Now that we at least have halfway got determined we have a right to keep and bear arms, I think that's the main reason for the Second Amendment, is to overthrow government when it becomes tyrannical.
We'll come back after these comments from our commercial sponsors. Thanks for joining us. Be right back with Jim Haas.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm talking with Jim Haas. He is going to be putting out a book on the Minuteman Experience. And before we get back with Jim, we've got a question or a comment from Dave from Illinois. And all of you who want to call in, 1-800-313-9443. Those toll-free lines are there for you to make a comment or make a question. But Dave, thanks for joining us from Illinois, the land of Lincoln. In fact, Lincoln's right there on the front of Newsweek magazine this week. So he's making the front pages again.
Well, I'd like to think he's rolling in his grave if he knew what was happening with concerns the immigration issue.
Oh, for sure he's rolling in his grave.
I mean, I guess I just wanted to call and say that, I think Americans, right-thinking Americans, need to realize we really have no representation in Washington anymore. I mean, it shouldn't be that difficult to enact a law to end birthright citizenship. That should be step number one.
Oh, yeah. Totally agree.
And I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but...
Chain migration, just cut it out.
Absolutely. And then if, whether it be Obama or McCain, we both know where they stand on immigration. And I think McCain made comments recently that he's going to deal with the issue in a compassionate and humane manner, which to me is code for there's going to be an amnesty coming.
Well, and screw every American citizen and every immigrant that comes here legally.
Well, absolutely, but if people think it's bad now, if that ever happens, I mean, you can kiss the Republican Party goodbye if there's ever an amnesty.
Right.
Because I think at that point, the Democrats are already doing it, but I think the Republicans are going to be so busy trying to ingratiate themselves with these so-called, these so-called new citizens, and then we're not going to matter anymore. I mean, it's bad as it is, but I think it's going to get to the point where we're non-persons in our own country.
Yeah, well, there's no question we'll be totally displaced. Our language and our culture is going to be totally disrupted. You know, as I'm reviewing this book, The New Case Against Immigration, Krikorian just nails it on the head, and he talks about the fact that we're simply turning this country into a loss of the national consciousness of an American.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a grave danger. And what he talks about this is the most important long-term measure of success in immigration is assimilation. Guess what? We're losing that so fast. It is, I mean, it's just unbelievable. I went down to the Wells Fargo today to the bank. They got a special Spanish speaker speaking there, and all of the lines, it's got all Spanish language, and they're just kowtowing to all the illegals right there in the bank.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, the illegals know it, and they walk around town with their chests puffed out. They know it's just a matter of time. They know that everyone's rolling out the red carpet for them, and they just have this attitude that, hey, this is our country, but these people are coming here as conquerors, more or less. I mean, they changed the street names. They want the textbooks rewritten to suit their version of history. They won't speak our language. I mean, the writing's on the wall. And I think, again, I know you guys know this, and I'm preaching to the choir. But, you know, in the event that an amnesty would get passed, I guess as Minutemen, what would your position be?
Well, then it would make the Minutemen a moot point, and I would say if an amnesty passes, I'm going to totally retire out of any kind of political stance. I will simply stop writing any kind of columns that have anything to do with immigration anymore, and I'll get off the air because. This country is going to be a dead country walking, essentially, if we get an amnesty and all these illegals become instant citizens. I think the country's not going to live to. We're not going to survive this thing. We're just going to degrade down to a second and even third world kind of condition throughout the country. And we'll lose what we knew of America.
Well, yeah, and the only thing I can envision is that people mainly of European descent are going to wind up congregating in certain areas of the country, and they'll become de facto nations within America.
Oh, well, as a matter of fact, I read and actually reviewed the book called Civil War II, The Coming Breakup of America
Thomas Taylor. Yeah, I read that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I got a copy right here, in fact, and he's right on the money, because I talked to a man in Michigan this last week, and he said, you can see why multiculturalism doesn't work. He says, go to any cafeteria in America, and you'll see all of these different ethnic groups simply separated among themselves at different tables. There is no such thing as multiculturalism.
No, there's not. In fact, it's a good thing you brought up Civil War II, because I was going to recommend that book. I think everybody needs to read it, because it was written by somebody that took part in the Bosnian conflict. He's seen ethnic conflicts up close, and he studied them.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, there's certainly no pretensions anywhere in that book. He's telling people like it is and what can happen, and I think what will happen. And the sad thing is, I mean, it's extremely ugly, these ethnic conflicts, and I see no way around it here in America.
I agree with you. Jim, you have a comment on that? Because you've seen the racism right
saying.
There in Mexican racism on the jobs in California here in Colorado.
Yeah, there's an old saying that kind of ties in with what you guys have just been talking about. And it says you can take the Mexican out of Mexico, but you can't take the Mexico out of the Mexican.
Right.
No, you can't.
Truer words were never spoken. They won't. They don't want to change.
No, they don't.
Their culture. They do not want to assimilate here. They do not want what we have except for our money and our jobs.
And I don't. I think there's a misperception. Oh, go ahead, Frosty. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. You have the floor, Dave.
I was going to say there's a misperception that, and I know there's exceptions to every rule that. Those, you know, whether they be black, whether they be Mexican, what have you, as long as they've matriculated through the universities and if they, you know, say work at a corporation, are successful, that means they've shed their ethnic identities and they're Americans. Well, mm-hmm. nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, in many cases, these are the intelligentsia for, I mean, these ethnic supremacists, and they're forming the core of this new ethnic supremacy in America. Mm-hmm. Like I said, there's exceptions to every rule, but I think people just need to have their eyes open because, I mean, those are
some
myths.
Yeah, it's hard to say what's going to happen in the second and third generations. You know, all of these anchor babies are going to be semi-assimilated, but, of course, the vast majority of them drop out in high school or high school dropouts. Very few of them go on and become successful.
Yeah, I think a lot of the high schools in L.A. where they're basically having all-out race wars right now, I mean, you're looking at second, third, and fourth generation Mexicans.
Right, mm-hmm. and there's no question they're having race wars. And I'm going to add to this also. I found, and I attended college. I did 2 degree programs, and I did 7 years in college. I found as this multicultural diversity thing came in as an idea back in the 60s and the early 70s when I was going to college,
mm-hmm.
it can work in an intellectual atmosphere where everybody's fed, everybody's relatively well off, and everybody's pretty much intellectually gifted, but multiculturalism outside those intellectual realms breaks down faster than a snowball in the middle of the Sahara Desert,
and
turns to violence and turns to ethnic bias and turns to all sorts of animosity.
But what I saw in college, I mean, it, you know, really multiculturalism, all it amounts to is you're deconstructing America and Western civilization. Everything we've done is horrible. We're racist. We're bigots.
Yeah.
We're the only ones that have ever engaged in genocide and ethnic cleansing. And it only highlights our vices and not our virtues. And that's really what multiculturalism is.
Well, you know, and I want to add to that, you know, if you look at all the bias and all the genocide and all, I mean, the Romans committed huge genocide, had unbelievable slavery. If you look at all the big cultures, even the Incas had slaves. If you look at Africa, present-day Africa today, and you get into some of these countries, slavery is going on in Africa today.
Yes, it is.
So the United States, yes, we did some terrible things to the Indians that were here first and so forth and so on, but the fact is this country has really allowed the most ethnic groups the greatest possibility that the earth has ever seen for personal fulfillment. So if we break this thing down, we break apart this nation, you're going to see us in the same kind of situations as Darfur and Sudan.
Oh, yeah.
It's totally insane. Our federal government is subsidizing racist groups like La Raza.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, why is our government with taxpayer money funding a racist organization like La Raza?
Well,
like Count La Mecha and all the others.
Yeah, that's absolutely
crazy.
Well, yeah, and the thing that's even more disturbing is that La Raza, supposedly a mainstream Mexican group, has yet to distance itself from the most extreme and radical groups like, I think it's Mecca and others that
Sherla and LULAC, all of them really total separatist organizations.
And not only that, I think it's
Tony Villaraigosa, members of all of those things.
Yeah, Antonio Villaraigosa. You know, even though he's got some major problems right now, he's got race wars going on there in L.A. He's got trash. I did a story in the trash buildup. 200,000 metric yards of trash are just getting thrown out by the illegal aliens and even the legal immigrants. I mean, he's got a mess. He's got a third world mess on his hands right there in Los Angeles.
Yeah, he's got a third world city right now.
Yeah.
Really, if you go to any medium or large sized city, and if you can ever get a police officer to be honest with you, he's gonna sit there and tell you it's only a matter of time before there's a race war.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, I remember when I got out of school, I was a criminal justice major. That's not the line of work I'm in, but we were at breakfast, and the cop said to the other cop across the table, he said, "So when do you think a race war is going to break out?" He said, "I just don't see any way out of this mess." And of course, I almost choked on my breakfast because I didn't think, you know, people were thinking that way at the time. But, I mean, they see it up close every day, and they see...
Right.
You know, what's going on and the direction that it's all taking us. And, you know, they're not isolated from it like most of us or like some of us are.
Sure.
I mean, I've seen it myself up close, and I've been witness to a lot of other things. And I think it's touched a lot of people's lives. That's why you're starting to fortunately see a groundswell against it.
I hope the groundswell grows fast enough to make sure that there's no amnesty and that, in fact, we really move toward attrition through enforcement. because if an amnesty comes through, I truly, I know for a fact this civilization is finished, and we're
it's
done
over.
As a culture. We're done as a language. We're done as a first world culture. We will not survive this thing.
No, we won't. And I certainly hope I'm wrong, but I'm afraid that somehow, some way, whether it be McCain or Obama, they're going to figure out a way to get some kind of an amnesty through. I think they're going to make it a priority. They're not going to talk about it in the debates, and I think the media is going to be a willing accomplice in trying to keep it out of the, you know, the public arena.
Mm-hmm.
I think once they're in office, I think you're going to see them try to push it through.
Scary stuff. Dave, I want to thank you for making those very outstanding comments and appreciate. And, again, joinnumbersusa.com. That's one of the big websites to make a difference. And numbersusa.com is one of our great hopes here in this country.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. We have another call, Vicki from Idaho. Vicki, you have a comment or a question for Jim Haas?
Yeah, I do. I was wondering if you heard that John McCain went down to Latin America and is campaigning down in Latin America today, or he's going to go down there.
Yeah,
and
he's down in Colombia now, isn't he, Frosty?
I heard. I don't know exactly where he is, but I know he's going down to kowtow to a whole bunch of folks. So, but I don't know the particular.
Yeah, I heard he was in Colombia, and then either tomorrow or the next day he's coming up into Mexico. But he's down there campaigning hard for the the Latin American countries. I don't know how many of them are voting for him, but he's definitely making a big show for the
Puerto Rico.
He's pandering, as they say.
Yeah, well, it seems to me like he's really campaigning for Obama. Because, I mean, I'm a conservative. I was a Republican all my life, but I quit the party, became an independent.
I got Lou Dobbs to convert me, too, here a couple of weeks ago.
There's no way in the world I would go out and vote for McCain. And so it seems to me like that what McCain is doing, everything, his every campaign position is just feeding right into the Obama campaign.
Oh, yeah, no question about that. And unfortunately, we have such terrible choices on both sides of the aisle right now. Everybody's going to, no one's going to be voting for somebody. They're going to be voting against somebody.
Well, I've always voted against somebody. I don't recall ever voting for anybody except Reagan. And in hindsight, that was probably the wrong thing to do too. But I can't even vote against anybody anymore. That's how, depressed I am with the entire situation. There's really no difference between the campaign positions of McCain and Obama. It's just the way they formulate their rhetoric. That's the only difference. But the positions are the same.
Mm-hmm. Jim?
I did hear that the NRA is going to spend about $27 million campaigning against Obama with a negative campaign because he's really wanting to pass a lot of new gun laws in the states and cities.
Yeah.
He really believes that, so.
Yeah.
People that own guns are not too happy with Obama running.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. That was my only comment.
Well, thank you, Vicki. I'm most appreciative, and okay. So all the folks up there in Idaho, it's always a pleasure, and always enjoy your comment.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Jim, what do you see? Dave from Illinois, he's talking about what we're facing as far as those kinds of outbreaks. Do you see that as clearly as he does, and even actually I do?
You're talking about Obama?
No, just the relations in the cities and the kinds of possibilities that we face.
Yeah, well, there's a different mentality in the big cities. The big cities, as you know, are primarily democratic and liberal, and so I think most of the big cities per se would favor Obama. Of course, most of the people in the heartland would probably lean more towards McCain, although a lot of them are awful unhappy with McCain right now, so really anything's up. My favorite saying is when anybody asks me who I'm going to vote for, I always reply and say, well, what makes you think there's going to be an election in November? I says all Bush has to do is declare martial law between now and then on a new terrorist event and suspend the elections indefinitely. Which is a theoretical possibility. It could happen. So that usually rattles them when I tell them that.
Yeah, that would be that would take a new precedent. That would take an amazing. I look at that possibility, and I've heard it more than once.
With all the executive orders he has stacked up, all it takes is a stroke of the pen, and it's an occurrence.
Understood. The one thing I think about George Bush right now, he has the lowest rating of any president since Nixon.
Oh, absolutely.
The Congress is about 5 points lower than that, I think,
19%. Right.
I think that the way things are going in this country right now with the gas prices and the unbelievable war continuing to just continue and all of the other stuff that's going on, I think there's a general malaise across the country, and I think George Bush is probably very sick, very tired, very worn out, and very depressed with his own spirit.
He looks like it, just looking at him on TV. He looks like he's aged 20 years in the last 2 years.
That's exactly right. He's treading water, and treading water just to get over to January the 20th of 2009. I don't think the man has the... You know, Lyndon Baines Johnson killed 58,000 people in Vietnam. He wounded 350,000. He caused so much misery and suffering, killed 2 or 3 million Vietnamese. And he realized that his lie, the Gulf of Tonkin, and all the other things that he did were horrendous against humanity. And he died a broken man in total depression. I think possibly, very probably, that George Bush may be going the same way.
See a little correlation there, huh, Frosty?
Yeah, very, very much a correlation. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Jim Haas out of Grand Junction, Colorado, an original Minuteman. We'll be right back after these comments and commercial thoughts. Thanks for joining us here at Republic Broadcasting. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I got to tell you this. If enough Mexicans get into this country and they start having roosters in the backyards, I'm going to have my little BB gun or my little .22, and I'm going to take those roosters out because I'm not going to have some rooster crowing at 4:30 in the morning. I don't care. So anyway, again, you're going to have a cultural confrontation, and that's what we're all facing. You know, with the minutes we have left here, ladies and gentlemen, make sure that you all know. And I'm getting a lot of letters. My website, go to my website, frostywooldridge.com. It's got a new look. I've got some new ideas on there. You'll even see a new picture of yours truly. Color picture, for heaven's sakes. And you'll see five new words on there. I'm getting about 450, 500 hits a day now. The key is it gives you the ability to take action. And, of course, one of the big things is to go to numbersusa.com and also go to newswithviews.com. Twice a week I write for them. And I'm just really connecting the dots for you, but also go to earth2100.tv. Still, to this day, no one understands, and I'm getting a lot of refutation from a lot of people across the nation that, population's no big deal. I'm going to tell you, it's going to be the biggest deal if we add 100 million people to this country in the next 30 years. It will be the greatest crisis for this country. All of us will be swimming in human soup and the consequences of water shortages, energy crisis, and ethnic violence and everything else that's going with that. So I urge you to check it out. And again, join Numbers USA. And if you could, Jim, in the last few minutes, talk about the fact that we have some horrible racism going on in this country, and it's being perpetrated by a whole new class of people.
Yeah, I lived most of my adult life in San Diego. I was born and raised in Arizona. Attended school from junior high up out in California, got my contractor's license out there. Basically been working in union construction out there since 1959. Got my general contractor's license in 72 out there. So I saw the evolution of the Mexican influx into the construction trades in Southern California. And it basically, there were always a few illegal Mexicans around, which were primarily laborers and helpers on non-union type jobs. Well, sometime during Dick Nixon's administration, there came up a situation where unions were prohibited from picketing all of the union gates around a job, which basically allowed, if you had to leave one open for non-union to come in, what good was it to picket the union gate to keep the union guys out? So basically that was the downfall of the construction industry at that point. illegal Mexicans started coming in with the other non-union workers, and pretty soon prices started falling, wages started falling, unions started going broke. Mexicans started moving up from laborers to carpenters, helpers. Pretty soon they were carpenters, and before you know it, you had the first Mexican foreman. And, of course, I found this to be true, not, you know, stereotyping them in general, but as a general rule, once a Mexican made foreman, it was just a matter of time until he ended up with an all-Mexican crew. And I kept wondering about this. I said to myself, well, are these guys that racist, or is there another reason involved for this? And I came to the conclusion after talking to them, and I speak fluent Spanish. I had a couple of years of it in high school, and I've been around Mexicans my whole life, so I do speak Spanish. I talked to them, and I found out that the reason these guys end up with an all-Mexican crew, or nearly all-Mexican crew, is because the foreman gets a kickback. And in Spanish, it's known as the mordida, the bite or the kickback. And they kick back $50 or $100 a week out of their paycheck to the Mexican foreman. If they don't, he doesn't have a job for him on Monday.
Boy, oh boy, Jim, thank you for bringing that to our attention. And we're out of time, sir. Thanks for joining us once again. We'll have you back.
Well, it's nice being with you, Frosty.
Thank you. God bless. Godspeed. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking to Jim Haas. He's absolutely one of the top folks out there. He's a Minuteman. His book will be out in the coming weeks. We'll have him back on the show to share with you the title of the book and this great author and this great American. And it's always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us here at Connecting the Dots. Good night. Godspeed. And God bless.
Men, are you?